pivotal NFC West matchup yesterday between the Rams and the Seahawks, and we finally saw that Sean McVay high-powered offense again. Jared Goff passing for 293 yards and two touchdowns. Todd Gurley adding 113 total yards and a touchdown. As the Seahawks snap their five-game win streak, Rams win it 28-12. Nick, how seriously do we have to take the Rams in the NFC? Or judging by your face, not very serious.
Not very seriously at all.
Okay.
If they hadn't blown that home game to Tampa early in the year when they scored 40 and lost, if they hadn't gone to Pittsburgh when Pittsburgh was on their second or third quarterback and only allowed 17 and lost, then we'd be talking about something here. Mm-hmm. We'd be talking about, is this a team that had a little Super Bowl malaise, you know, it shook it off, and now is going to be a dangerous sixth seed? But how seriously do I have to take a team that's going to miss the playoffs? Not that seriously. And so, credit to the Rams for getting a win that I did not expect yesterday. I thought Seattle would win. I thought Seattle was going to be able to keep pace with San Francisco, if not take the outright lead in the division, because I didn't think San Francisco was going to do what they did in New Orleans. And so that's an excellent win. And it does speak, though, to where we've changed our expectations with this team, Canny, when in a game where Cooks has zero catches for 0 yards, obviously, Todd Gurley, it felt like he had a huge game, and then you're like, oh, 23 for 79, 120-yard run. And Jared Goff has two touchdowns and two picks. We're like, man, that Rams offense is back. I think it speaks to where they had been up until the last couple weeks. So the season's not going to be an embarrassment for them. They're not going to finish with 6 or 7 wins. We know that now. But I still don't think they're going to make the playoffs, and I still think they're going to be in big, big trouble going into next season because of the contracts they have on that team moving forward.
Yeah, I think they're going to come up just short. Their next three games at Dallas, at San Francisco, and then home against Arizona in week 17. That San Francisco game is the one that you look at and say, 8-ball says doubtful that they'll be able to go in there and get a win. But, I mean, listen, the playoffs started a couple of weeks ago for the Rams when they had that Monday night loss to the Baltimore Ravens. But they've won 5 out of the last 7, so you give them credit for that. But you just recognize because they got off to the slow start, their margin for error was razor thin. But last night, you got to give them credit.
It was a good win for them last night.
It was a good win for them. They beat a division opponent at home. Now, I don't know why I got on that Seattle Seahawks corner with Nick Wright after what he said on Friday, because I should have known better.
I cost you some money.
It was a short week for the Seattle Seahawks because they played on Monday night and then going on the road against a division opponent who had their back up against the wall. But listen, Jared Goff played well, especially in the first half of that game. He continued what he did in that game that he had against Arizona, where he threw for 400 yards. And I think it was a situation where that offense was clicking early. First two drives, 8 plays, 75 yards, capped by a Malcolm Brown touchdown run, and then 12 plays, 85 yards. So I just looked at that in terms of them dictating the complexion of the game, and Seattle just could not make enough plays offensively. I thought they had a chance late in that third quarter after the missed field goal, and they had a 3rd and 7 in plus territory, and then Aaron Donald comes up with the sack, and they end up forcing the punt, and I thought that was the difference in the game.
I think the Rams' defensive front was outstanding. Russell Wilson was under duress the entire game.
Sacks don't tell the whole story because they were getting after him.
Even more so than that. I agree. I thought the Rams' defense really played a brilliant football game. I can't take them seriously as a contender because of, like you said, they'd have to run the table the rest of the way. I don't think they can go to San Francisco and get a win.
But it was one of those, did the Rams play well? Did Seattle play terribly? You don't really know who sort of you would place all the, you know, give the kudos to. But I'm wondering if you think that this hurt Seattle's Super Bowl chances at all, the loss and the way they lost yesterday.
Well, the one thing I do worry about with Seattle is not necessarily been the most consistent group on the offensive side of the ball. And then they lost Rashad Penny on the first drive. And a knee injury, we'll have to wait
never
for the diagnosis,
back.
See how that goes. But he never came back in the game, and he had been playing really, really well. So I just worry about that offense being able to do enough, being able to score enough points, because that defense has been Jekyll and Hyde for the Seattle Seahawks. Now, they showed up yesterday in the second half, Quadri Diggs, a couple of takeaways, including the pick six early. But that defense has got to be better in order for this Seahawks team to really be taken seriously as a contender.
So listen, so people are going to, I think, overreact to the impact this has on Seattle's standing, because if they'd have won today, they wake up as the 1 seed. They lose, they end up waking up as a 5 seed. With that said, Seattle still has it all in front of them. Because they beat San Francisco earlier and they have San Francisco in Week 17, that Week 17 Niner game, mark it down now, it's going to be 13-2 San Francisco against 12-3 Seattle, with the winner winning the division and assuredly getting a bye, and the loser falling all the way to the 5 seed. So this loss was oddly one they could handle as far as their positioning. Where it's concerning is, it's now a month of Russell Wilson going from running away with the MVP to not playing great. Since week 10, 4 touchdowns, 4 picks, 1 pick in each of these last 4 games. His passer rating's down 83 after the first 9 weeks of the year, it was 119. And that defense has not gotten better. Like, the Seahawks defense again allows 25-plus points. Warren Sharp pointed this out on Twitter. They've made a living all year about falling down big early, double digits early, being down at halftime, and finding a way to come back. Man, eventually you crap out. Like, eventually your luck runs cold on that. So that, to me, is the bigger concern for Seattle than the individual loss, because they still can win this division. They still can get a bye. I think they're going to win the next two. I think the next two are Carolina and Arizona. Yep. They shouldn't have trouble there. And then the huge matchup at home against San Francisco. But it's more stylistically, they were winning by a lot of Russell Wilson magic. And if that magic does not reappear in the final quarter of the season, then they don't have a whole ton of paths to being a Super Bowl contender.
Well, they need that magic to reappear, but they also need that defense to play better.
To
keep
show
in
up.
Mind, when they beat the San Francisco 49ers on that Monday night game, that was one of Jadeveon Clowney's best game, if not his best game, the entire year. Yep. Quadri Diggs also had a huge interception in that one, too. So they need that defense in order to be at their best and compete with the better teams in the NFC. But if you're talking about this Seattle Seahawks team, I do not have confidence, if they have to start the playoffs as a wild card, that this team can win 3 straight road games in order to get to the Super Bowl. I feel like this is a team that has to be able to be one of those top 2 seeds in the NFC in order to give themselves a chance in order to be a contender.
Do you agree with Canny, or was this a hiccup for this team last night?
Well, no, I think that they have to. I think the Niners, the whole NFC right now is so confusing, because it's so much of it is going to come down to who gets the buys, to your point. I agree that Seattle, if they don't win that Week 17 game against San Francisco and they're on the road in Week 1 of the playoffs and then have to go either to San Francisco, New Orleans, Green Bay, their path to the Super Bowl all of a sudden evaporates.
All right, let's
Tough
move
calls.
On. Hard
Man.
As it is. Game of the
I'd
day
I'd send
yesterday.
A letter to the league office.
49ers in New Orleans. Just email them. Pick this one up in the fourth quarter. It was a tight game throughout, though. Drew Brees finding Michael Thomas for a 21-yard touchdown. One of his 11 catches on the day. Thomas is on pace for a record 149 catches this season. Just under a minute left in the fourth. Brees tossing his 5th touchdown of the day, this one to Tre'Quan Smith. Saints go up 46-45. San Fran would have one more chance, and they would not waste it. 4th and 2. How about the call? Jimmy G to George Kittle for a 39-yard catch and run while Marcus Williams is literally grabbing at his face mask. Muscles his way down. That sets up the Robbie Gould 30-yard field goal winner. Nails it as the clock expires. The San Francisco 49ers win 48-46. They now sit alone atop the NFC with an 11-2 record. All right, Nick, did San Francisco prove they are the best team in the conference?
Man, Canny, I got to give you credit. Richard Sherman, I got to give him credit. The greater Bay Area, who already doesn't like me because of all the whole Warrior stuff, I got to give them credit. Man, your football team's really, really good. And they won a game a way I didn't think they could. Could they go to New Orleans and win? I didn't think they would. I picked New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, if you'd have told me, we're talking about a Niner win today, I'd say, oh, okay, 24-21, they maybe get a strip sack of Drew Brees, set up a short field. If you tell me this is going to be a shootout, I said it would have been not a shootout, an execution, that the Saints just annihilate them. Mm-hmm. I did not think, Canny, the Niners had this in them in that environment, going where Drew Brees plays one of his best games of the season. Now, it's not over for the Niners because they still have to play Week 17 against Seattle. They still could fall all the way to the 5. They could be a 13-3-5 seed with one loss to Seattle. And so we got to see how it plays out. But right now, they annihilate Green Bay. They play Baltimore damn near to a draw on a monsoon on the road. And then they go do that. That is an impressive month of football for the San Francisco 49ers.
No, it's really impressive what this team has been doing, and the fact that they were able to go into the Superdome and get a win. I mean, that speaks volumes about what your team is made of. And then your quarterback in the late game theatrics that we saw from Jimmy Garoppolo, I mean, to get the ball with less than a minute to go and drive him 7 plays, 63 yards to set up that field goal, including a 4th-and-2 throw to George Kittle, which he turns into a 39-yard gain, plus the personal foul for the face mask to move your kicker even closer. I just feel like that was the moment we were all waiting on. And Richard Sherman talked about it a little bit after the game. He said that Jimmy Garoppolo played yesterday like the best quarterback in the league. Now, I understand he's putting a little bit on it because it's his quarterback. But the fact that they went in and hung 48 on the New Orleans Saints, that was impressive. This is a different Saints defense than in years past.
Yes.
Dennis Allen has that group improved, but the fact that they were able to weather the early storm, you saw the Saints march down the field the first couple of possessions and touchdown passes to Jared Cook. The fact they were able to fight their way out of that, that was really impressive to me. But this game, in my opinion, came down to the fact that San Francisco was able to capitalize on the miscues more than New Orleans did. Offer the interception that tipped off on Emmanuel Sanders' hands, the Saints only got a field goal out of that. If you look at the fumble from Alvin Kamara and then the fake bunt by Taysom Hill, which was a terrible call, the San Francisco 49ers got 2 touchdowns off of those mistakes. So you're talking about the points off of turnovers being 14-3, the difference of the game right there.
Well, and you mentioned Jimmy Garoppolo. I got to give Jimmy G credit now. Dating back to week 8, he's played 7 football games. One of them, Jenna, he's had a passer rating below 110. Now, it was a real bad game. It was the game against Seattle, which, man, if they'd have taken the tie against Seattle, they'd have the 1 seed locked up. They'd be too clear of Seattle. They'd be too clear of New Orleans with 3 to play. But Jimmy G has played really, really well. You're right, the fake punt, I'll never understand. 4th-and-18 fake punt, I'll never understand it the rest of my life. But New Orleans started the game with 4 straight touchdowns, and San Francisco won. I never thought that could have happened.
But credit Kyle Shanahan for allowing Jimmy G to go out there and throw his way to a win. Look, if you're going to doubt any part of this San Francisco team, it was, for most people,
yes,
it was their quarterback. Did he prove everybody wrong? I know what, you know, Sherman said, and I know Emmanuel Sanders came out yesterday and said, this guy's really good. No one's really seen it. Did we see it yesterday?
Well, I mean, if you can go into New Orleans and get a win, you tell me the NFC opponent that they can't go into their building and beat them. Like, I don't know. I mean, in terms of home field advantage, I would put the Superdome right up there,
yep,
with where Seattle is at, with Lambeau
New
Field,
England.
New England. I mean, it's right there at the top of the list. So the fact that they were able to do that, again, kind of what we said about the Kansas City Chiefs in terms of being able to have the confidence to know that you can go into that building and win. I mean, if for some reason the 49ers don't have one of those top 2 seeds and they start off the playoffs as a wild card,
right,
I think the way that this team is built, they can go on the road and get a win because their defense will travel, their running game will travel. The only question has been their quarterback. And based on how he played yesterday, I don't know how you couldn't feel good about your chances with Jimmy G.
Well, and that last point to me is the most important one. Because, again, the seedings this year is going to be haywire. Seattle or San Francisco, one of them is going to be the 5 seed. If San Francisco could win their next 2, and if they lose week 17 at Seattle, they will be a 13-3 wildly overqualified 5 seed. If that happens, they're going to have to go back to New Orleans. And now they know they can not only win there, they can win there playing the Saints' style of football. And the Saints, for all year, they've been understandably upset at the officials. They got to look at themselves on this one. The 2-point conversion after they took the lead late, it was a very odd play in a critical spot where the difference between being up 1 and up 3 is enormous. Your point on not taking advantage of the turnovers, the fake punt was just horrific game management. That is more aggressive than any analytics master would tell you to do. So New Orleans, still, they can still get the 1, but they would have been in great position if they could have held on for that win yesterday.
You know who once felt really good about Jimmy Garoppolo?
Who?
The New England Patriots.
Oh, yeah. They still might. Did you know that as many as 7 out of 10 adults wished they played a musical instrument? Unfortunately, many never do because they think it's either too late for them to start or too expensive. Musician is an online music education platform rethinking the way people learn music. It's the fun, easy, and affordable way to learn guitar, piano, bass, ukulele, or even learn to sing. Just download the app to your desktop, tablet, or phone and start playing. Musician is perfect whether you're just starting out or have been playing for years. Enjoy thousands of popular songs, expertly crafted lessons and exercises across dozens of genres. Compared to private lessons, Musician is more affordable, lets you learn on your own schedule. You'll get bite-sized lessons, easy-to-follow instructions, and exercises tailored to your goals. Using Musician to learn an instrument like guitar or piano is much better than trying to teach yourself. So, if you've been wanting to learn an instrument or simply want some help getting back to playing, check out Musician. You can get an extended 14-day free trial of their premium package at musician.com/play. That's unlimited lessons and unlimited songs on as many instruments as you want for 2 whole weeks. Just go to musician.com/play to start your free trial today. That's YOUSICIAN.com/play.
Back here, first things first, now joined by Fox College football analyst Joel Klatt in studio. It's nice to have you here.
I love
here.
It. I love being here.
We are so excited.
I'm just here with all the New England tears raining down on us.
That's what it feels like, right?
Well,
I'm just going by what he said.
I don't make the weather. I just report it. I'm looking outside. I don't know. I don't know where else it could have come from. Good to see you.
You too, man. You too. A
lot going on in the NFL. Even more going on right now in college, right? Yeah. Let's get to it. The college football playoff is set after a great weekend of action. Joe Burrow and the LSU Tigers will face off against Jalen Hurts and the Oklahoma Sooners in the Peach Bowl, while Justin Fields and Ohio State will take on Trevor Lawrence and Clemson in the Fiesta Bowl. So after a season of shuffling at the top, it is LSU, Oklahoma, Ohio State, and Clemson. Joel, did the committee get it right?
Yeah, I don't think that they had any way to get this wrong, right? Unless they were going to do something absolutely crazy with Georgia as a two-loss non-champion over Oklahoma. I didn't think that was going to be the case whatsoever.
Joel might have resigned if that happened.
I think I would have. I think I would. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I would have gone. I would have become a banker or something like that. I will say, at number one, I think that there was a conversation and a pretty vigorous debate between Ohio State and LSU and what their resumes were. At the end of the day, I still was the one supporting Ohio State. I thought that they were more dominant over the ranked teams that they had played during the course of the year versus what LSU had done. But LSU's performance, specifically on Saturday against Georgia, I think ultimately was the trump card in that room and what made them the number one team in the country here going into the playoff.
I thought during the selection show, just to give them credit, someone made a good point. So the argument for Ohio State was what they did in the second half against Wisconsin, blanking Wisconsin to come back.
Yeah, 27-0 run.
And the counterpoint was, and if it could have been 30-0, thanks Ohio State, punched the last one in, you'd have covered. But regardless, the counterpoint was, yeah, LSU didn't need a great second half because they had a great first half and a great second half. So I don't think that there's a wrong answer here. Did the way it shook out, did it shake out to give us the best semifinal, in your opinion?
I think that ultimately the number one seed was so important this year because of this looming giant that has won 28 straight games. They're the defending national champion, and everyone was angling towards trying to avoid playing Clemson in the national semifinal because they still have Trevor Lawrence, who won the national championship a year ago. They still have Dabo Swinney. Their defense has played dominant football during the course of the year. This is a team that, candidly, they might win it all still, you know, because someone's got to go out there and actually beat them and end this 28-game winning streak if they're going to take down a national championship. So that's why I thought there was so much angling going on. If you wanted to talk about Saturday, and yes, Ohio State did not play well in the first half, that's all well and good, but Ohio State never gave up 400 yards rushing to a bad Ole Miss team, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, at some point, you got to take in the whole body of work. Like I said, I had no problem with what they did, LSU at number one, but just to boil it down to one day, one half, and say this is why you're number one, this is one of the reasons why I bristle with the committee and this 13-member avenue of ranking teams. But ultimately, this is a really good four teams, and let's come to a bottom line conclusion here. I'm so glad we have a playoff. Mm. You know, the BCS would have left Clemson out.
The defending national champion
that's right.
has won 20, and anyone that's who right. argued against the playoff has to reckon with for back-to-back years, right?
That's right.
An undefeated team would have been left out. Like, you can say whether we need 4, 6, 8, whatever, mm-hmm. but at 2, it would have been this year. You would have either pick who gets left out. The SEC champ with the Heisman Trophy winner, who arguably has the best resume, mm-hmm. the Big Ten undefeated champ with the best player in the country, I think, in the pass rusher, Chase Young.
Mm-hmm.
And some would say the best resume, or the defending national champion, who ever since getting tested by UNC has just crushed the world and won 28 straight. One of those teams would have been told, you don't get to prove you're the national
champion. And it would have been Clemson, yes. based on the calculation.
Which is crazy, but I mean, Clemson just sleepwalks through the ACC schedule. I mean, I'm an ACC guy, so I keep a close eye on it, and they demolished my Virginia Cavaliers yes. in the ACC championship game on Saturday night in Charlotte. But you were talking about them and talking about how dynamic Trevor Lawrence is,
yeah.
but on the defensive side of the ball, it's been a little Jekyll and Hyde for that Clemson team this year. I know they're ranked up there again this year, but for Brett Venables with this group, where does this Clemson defense stack up with Clemson defenses in the past couple of years?
Well, it's so different, you know, and if you look at what they were strong at and where they were strong a year ago, they were so great at the line of scrimmage. You think of all those guys in the NFL right now, right? I mean, the Christian Wilkins and so on and so forth, Dexter Lawrence, they were so strong up front, all Americans all across the defensive line. Now you've got a defense that is much stronger in the second level and the third level. So they're a secondary-oriented team. They follow Isaiah Simmons at the linebacker position. I think that's difficult because from a year-to-year shift, they've had to completely change where they're strong, how they develop pressure, how they stop the run, what they're going to do. And so what you saw, at least in my estimation, is a team that didn't really understand how to play early. They were trying to figure themselves out. They were able to do that because they were bored with that ACC schedule. But then late in the season, they started playing better and better and better. Lawrence was bored early in the season, was turning the football over, played better and better and better towards the end of the season. And now, here they are. They've been bored all year, very untested, and yet they're the defending national champ 28 games in a row. I think it's going to be tough to beat Clemson. I really do. Even if it's Ohio State and Phoenix, that's a tough game for Ohio State.
So you like Clemson in that game?
I'm not sure who I'm going to pick just yet. I think it's a flip for me. And I'm a pretty staunch, I believe in Ohio State. I saw them 7 times, for goodness sakes. I need an apartment in Columbus at this point. For me, it's a coin flip. I think Ohio State has been a great team. I think Clemson is a great team. I think Vegas is going to favor Clemson. I think
it
have they already?
It opened by 1. It moved up to 2.5, and now it's back around 1.5.
So they're right there, about a flip. It's going to be so interesting because Trevor Lawrence is this generational talent at the quarterback position, and we've got this great pass rusher from Ohio State who has been double and triple teamed now for 2 straight games. Did you see some of those videos of what Wisconsin was doing? Yeah. 4 guys just sitting on Chase Young. I can't wait to watch that play out. I think it's a coin flip. I think it actually comes down to the inexperienced quarterback for Ohio State. If Justin Fields plays well, I think Ohio State will have a great chance to win.
What about the other game, LSU and Oklahoma?
I mean, I've seen Oklahoma a bunch this year as well, and they're just not what they have been the last couple of years. I don't believe that defense is going to be able to do to LSU what they were able to do to Baylor. I mean, Baylor was playing with a backup quarterback, a third-string quarterback for portions of that game in the Big 12 championship game, and LSU is going to carve them up. I really like Oklahoma had a good year. It's great that they're in the playoff. They're a kind of a placeholder. We were all waiting for like, okay, who's the number 4 team? It's going to be. It was almost Oklahoma by default. Utah said no thanks. You know, yeah. Oregon said no thanks against Arizona State, and now Oklahoma's going to have to go play LSU. That's going to be really tough. And this whole playoff, by the way, is just playing into LSU's hands. They're going to be able to play in Atlanta where they just played. Then, if they win, most likely win against Oklahoma, they get basically a home game for the national championship, and they'll be able to play in New Orleans for the national championship against either Clemson or Ohio State.
Do you like LSU?
He's not going to give his pick.
Overall, I'm not
sure. He has
to.
That's what it says on the sheet. Ask Joel about his pick.
LSU over Oklahoma, yes.
Okay. All right, so you really know.
Any of these three, I think, would beat Oklahoma. There's no doubt. I think because of New Orleans, if I had to lay money today in Vegas, I would lay money on LSU.
I told you, the sheet said he was going to do it.
Well, before we go, if I may, just real quick.
Yeah.
This has been, I think, the single best year for Fox in college football. The pregame show, you and Gus doing these great games. You have been such a huge part of it.
Oh, I appreciate that.
It's been a monster as far as people watching it and the quality of games. And you and Gus are the best tandem in the business.
Oh, man, that's nice of you. I feel a little, normally we argue.
We don't have to worry about it.
That's nice of you.
Thank you very much. Playoff with four home games.
A lot of hard work. A lot of people put in a lot of hard work.
You guys have done an amazing job.
Thank you.
We love to have you here in studio, Joel.
It's always good. You bet, Jenna.
Back here, first things first. We are now joined by head coach Eric Mangini.
We're so excited to see you, coach. We're dropping things. How are you doing today, my friend?
Good to see you. So excited to be here.
I really need it.
So happy to be here.
Good to see you.
Coach. Let's talk some Patriots. Okay. All right, here we go. Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs in Foxborough to take on Tom Brady and the Patriots. There is Tom Brady. We'll pick this one up in the third. Chiefs in field goal range. Mahomes finds Travis Kelce on third down, but he loses the ball thanks to Devin McCourty. Kelce was ruled down, but after review, it is ruled Patriots ball. You know who's not happy about that? Bill Belichick. He thought the recovery could easily have gone for six. Who knows? On the ensuing drive, Brady finds rookie wideout N'Keal Harry. So Harry will tiptoe down the sideline, gets into the end zone, but the refs rule Harry was out of bounds, and he clearly wasn't.
Belichick's
Patriots
a challenge.
Out of challenges, though, Nick.
Damn.
So they'd have to settle for a field goal to cut the lead to seven. One last possession for the Pats. The Chiefs send the house. Brady can't connect with Julian Edelman. Casey snaps the Patriots' 21-game home win streak. That is all. Coach Belichick, Mancini got so into it. How worried do you think the Patriots should be about the offense that you saw there, the offense we've seen the last month or so?
How happy is Nick right now?
So happy that I was supposed to ask him the question.
No, I want to hear from you. I'm excited.
He's like the guy who sits on the corner and screams a prediction, and then finally it comes through. He's like, oh, my God, I told you I was right. I told you. Look, there needs to be some concern, but there's been concern throughout the course of the season because of the issues that they have with the offensive line. And I've talked about this before. Those problems are real, and they're not going away. And it got... they took another step further yesterday, losing their not being able to play their starting center, who's a backup center for the captain who they lost. So it's been a series of challenges from an offensive line perspective. Have really no ability right now to run the ball on a consistent basis, and the amount of pressure on Tom is getting. It seems to be increasing on a weekly basis. So there's a lot of things that they have to overcome, but they still find a way to be in every single game. They still find a way to be in a position to win those games later
late.
And against an offense that's supposed to be as prolific as Kansas City is, that disappears in the second half of yesterday's game, you know, it gives you them hope that if they get a few things straightened out, they get a chance here moving forward.
So the Patriots obviously should be immensely concerned about their offense. They never lose this game. They're at home. They win the turnover battle. They block a punt. They execute not one, but two trick plays, one for a touchdown, one for their second biggest gain of the day, and they still can't crack 17? Their five biggest plays by yardage on the day were a flea flicker, mm-hmm. a pass by the running back, one defensive pass interference, another defensive pass interference, and a 42-year-old man scrambling on fourth and six. Like, their offense has no ability to move the football against a supposedly horrible Chiefs defense. And now I understand the narrative can be that where it all went wrong for New England is their center and their fullback got hurt. And now they can't run the football. And now all these things. What I would argue is this. Teams do not respect their ability to throw it outside, so they are able to dedicate more people to stopping the run, and they're going to heat up Tom Brady, something for the first 17 years of his career he made a living off of. You could never blitz Tom Brady, and now you can, on the final play of a game, and the ball can be batted away. New England's last 5 weeks, they got whooped by Baltimore. They escaped against Philly. Philly hasn't won since. They escaped against Dallas. Dallas hasn't won since. They got whooped by Houston. a Houston team that just got annihilated at home by the Broncos, and they got beat by Kansas City at home despite winning the turnover battle, despite blocking a punt. Yeah, it's time to be seriously concerned about New England, because as good as the defense is, when they play the best offenses, Canny, the offenses get at least to 20. Baltimore did, Houston did, Kansas City did. Can New England's offense do it? I haven't seen it.
Yeah, they've averaged, what, 18 points over the last five games, and they only cracked 20 once.
In garbage
and that,
time.
And that was garbage time against the Texans. So, yeah, you absolutely have to be worried. But, Nick, you made a point about how Tom Brady was good against the blitz in years past. Well, I think that has to do with Tom Brady having the trust of his wide receivers. And outside of Julian Edelman, you can't say that Tom Brady has confidence in any of those guys. Jacoby Myers, he had another critical drop early in the fourth quarter that would have been a touchdown right there. They had to settle for a field goal. Like, those types of miscues, I think that's what's leading Tom Brady down this road where he's frustrated and he's constantly trying to get in the ear of those receivers, because those guys aren't being able to create the separation versus man coverage that he's accustomed to seeing. So when they do come with extra defenders on the rush, Tom Brady doesn't have any outlet to go to, because everybody knows we're going to take away Julian Edelman, and you don't have any answers, at least not on a consistent basis. But in watching yesterday's game, especially in the second half, there were a couple of situations that you have to look at and you say, you know what, if the officials make the right call in those situations, you're probably talking about the complexion of the game being a little bit different. Like the N'Keal Harry touchdown that they ruled he was out of bounds on the three. I don't understand what the point is of calling that play dead at the three when all scoring plays are reviewed. Just review the play. It was a situation where you obviously see that N'Keal Harry was able to keep that left foot in bounds and extend to the pylon. To me, that's one of those situations where I know we like to say that Tom Brady and the Patriots offense was awful, but that officiating was really bad, and I felt like it cost them an opportunity to win that game.
Yeah, and we can criticize New England's offense, and the bar has been set so high for them to overcome any type of adversity. And we can say, well, look, they've got a few problems on the offensive line. They're on their third center, okay? They're on their this is the fourth left tackle that's cycled through here. Those problems are significant, and it's not just the pressure. It's the how quickly defenders are getting on Tom Brady in three and four man rushes. And that last play of the game, he did a great job of getting the protection right, being able to pick up that blitz. The leverage on the seven route was fantastic. They went to the right place, and it was a pretty good play by a defensive player. But New England, again, is in a position to tie that game.
I love it so much. I love it so much. The great job was done by the quarterback who threw the incomplete pass that ended the game. The pretty good job was done by the secondary player, the defensive back who batted it away. And we can. Some of these are little word games, Coach. They're on their fourth left tackle because they let Nate Solder walk. Because they let Trent Brown walk. And now their left tackle is their first-round pick, Isaiah Wynn. Like, these are conscious decisions.
We're talking about Isaiah Wynn in the middle of the season coming back from IR. N'Keal Harry, the same thing. Jacoby Myers is a rookie. Mohamed Sanu, they just got. So, look, we want to look at this and say that they can't do anything. But the things that they're overcoming would have crippled almost any other team. It doesn't happen for New England. And go ahead and take a victory lap with Kansas City, who scored 3 points in the second half. Polar opposite of what they've historically done, right? Where they're no good in the first half and actually play well in the second half. This time they just reversed it.
But you told me that last year, the second halves didn't matter because they lost. And now they won, but what if? And what if the call went their way? You're right. He should not have been ruled out of bounds.
Yes.
And if Belichick hadn't blown his first challenge, he could have challenged that. But despite that, they have first and goal from the three, and they can't punch it in because the offense has no punch whatsoever. And we can say, oh, well, last year they lost two in a row late as well. They did. The difference between this year's team and last year's team, among other things, is that there's four teams that matter in the AFC. New England, Baltimore, Houston, Kansas City. Baltimore, Houston, and Kansas City are 2-1 against those opposing three teams. New England, loss, loss, loss. If they are going to make the Super Bowl, they're going to have to beat one, if not two, of those teams. I have no evidence they can do it, and now I don't even have evidence they can do it in New England.
I think what you should probably do is write them off.
Okay. No problem.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.